Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Greetings, fellow Force users, and welcome to Aggressive Negotiations, a Star Wars podcast on the Nerd Party Network that explores Star Wars from some different angles than you're expecting. Different points of view, if you will.
Whoa, wait.
Yeah?
Do you have to be a Force user to listen? Why, what if you're just like a bounty hunter or, you know, a scoundrel?
Well, you know what? Scoundrels.
Politician.
No politicians.
A Gungan.
Gungans are always welcome at this table, my friend.
I didn't want anybody to feel like left out because weren't.
That's a really good point. Everybody but politicians are welcome. So I'll say that. Well, that is Matthew Rushing, one of the Jedi Masters. I'm one of the Jedi Masters, John Mills. And welcome again to Aggressive Negotiations. This week, let's get right to it because there is so much to talk about with this topic. We are talking about Mandalorians. Mandalorians. In case anybody's unfamiliar with Mandalorians, just to give a rundown, people meet Boba Fett back in the late 70s, and then Empire Strikes Back. They fall in love with the armor. His backstory gets kind of touched on in the Marvel comics, thrown out, rewritten in the 1990s. What it means to be a Mandalorian comes into more focus then, and then the clones bring it into focus again. But we don't really get the Mandalorians until the Clone Wars TV series. So, Matt, just as a rundown, really quick, in case anybody somehow hasn't heard the term Mandalorian or needs a refresher, how would you define a Mandalorian?
Well, I define a Mandalorian as a character from Mandalore.
I like that definition.
That is
to the
very
point.
And right. Well, and the reason that I say that is because I think we need to deal with this subject right up front, John. Is Jango Fett and Boba Fett, are they even Mandalorians? Because the reason I asked that question, in one of the Clone Wars episodes, the first Clone Wars episode where we visit Mandalore, Obi-Wan is talking to Prime Minister Almec and mentions the fact that he had run into a bounty hunter with Mandalorian armor, and Almec says, Jango Fett is not a Mandalorian. How he came by that armor, I do not know. And so the question becomes, are they even Mandalorians?
Ah, this actually gets into one of the things that I like most about the Mandalorian mythos. I'm glad you went right for it. I'm going to say yes, and for this reason. The Mandalorians are one of the few cultures in Star Wars, or Star Trek, or pretty much all of sci-fi, where there isn't one single planetary culture. We encountered it with Naboo, with the Naboo and the Gungans. Mandalore, we actually encounter a planet, or planetary system as one of the moons is inhabited, where there are conflicts within the people themselves as to what it means to be a Mandalorian. I definitely believe that Jango Fett is Mandalorian by tradition. He chooses that armor on purpose. And for me, the way that the whole Mandalorian thing works is I think that it's particularly brilliant that the Mandalorians are basically the Mandalorian warriors, who we later come to know as Death Watch, are basically vanquished by the Jedi by the time we encounter them in the Clone Wars, for all practical purposes. And Jango Fett revives his version of the Mandalorian race with a contract with the Kaminoans. And the Mandalorians get their ultimate revenge by wiping out the Jedi. Like, that's how I see it work out in the balance sheet of things. Do you come from it from a different point of view, as it were?
Well, it's interesting because I don't know if we have an answer to the question yet. I don't feel as though I can be definitive on whether or not Jango Fett is a Mandalorian. He could be. He could have been a member of Death Watch and then gone off by himself and became a bounty hunter. We honestly don't know. So I feel like the most honest answer is we haven't been told in the Star Wars mythos from Clone Wars to Rebels to the films whether or not Boba Fett and Jango Fett are actually Mandalorians or whether they just wear that armor. And so I honestly can't tell you, because I don't think anybody can tell you that's the case.
Okay. See, I won't lie that I'm sure that part of my, you know, my belief of what, you know, how it ties together, there is definitely some residual stuff left over from the comics that came out around the time of Attack of the Clones and all of that stuff. There was assigned to Jango Fett this idea that he was a Mandalorian working to, you know, an ultimate super objective of wiping out the Jedi and getting revenge for what had happened to the Mandalorians in the past. And all of that stuff technically is thrown out, but it could very well, you know, easily be lurking in the background of my mind, because that version of everything was actually written to try to ameliorate what the prequels had stepped all over with Journeyman Protectorate Jaster Mareel, which was back in the 1990s. So with this current mythos that they have created for Mandalorians, do you prefer this version or do you prefer any earlier version? Do you try to blend them together in your brain? Because I honestly think I'm blending them together in my brain, making them work together. Do you try to do the same?
I don't think so. I think that it was a lot like this, and forgive, I apologize, I'm going to reference the other Star franchise, but I've been trying to think of a better way to put this, and I can't. Okay. So, to me, the Mandalorians and what we learn about them, and honestly, all that we know about Mandalorians comes from the Clone Wars. That's the official source that we have now for who Mandalorians are and what they are.
Okay.
And I think a lot like Star Trek Enterprise did with the Vulcans, the Clone Wars did with the Mandalorians. And that was to show them in a light to which nobody thought that they would see, because everybody's just expected that they're just this warrior race. Basically, they're like Star Wars Klingons, basically. And they have these clans and we all this stuff. But what we got in the Clone Wars, I think, was just like what I liked about Enterprise, what we got with the Vulcans, because it gave us somewhere to go. You know, it gave us the story of, and a much more rich story, I believe, as to why they are the way they are. So that by the time you do get to the original trilogy, Mandalorians are back to being what we all kind of thought in our head from EU sources, you know, from legend sources, all that. But we got an interesting story about how we got back there.
Yeah.
And so to me, it added a layered and textured look at those characters instead of just, because to me, having that storyline is so much more interesting than just, well, Mandalorians were always what you thought they were, you know, like, because that's kind of boring.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that sort of dovetails into, you know, the whole idea that, you know, you have Concordia/Concord Dawn. You know, at odds with the Mandalorian homeworld, and there's all of this intrigue that the Separatists and the Republican use as leverage against each other, you know, throughout the galactic history and everything. The thing that's amazing to me, though, is the fact that this essentially all starts simply because a character, a throwaway character, if you will. I know people hate to hear it that way, but Boba Fett's basically a throwaway character. He serves a purpose as catching Han Solo. It could have been Dengar. It could have been IG-88. It could have been anything like that. But instead, they chose the guy with cool armor. This all starts from somebody just with a cool set of armor that fans love. The old gunslinger walking around. Do you envision a Star Wars as rich or as interesting, especially in the current connected universe era, without this whole Mandalorian thing? Like, what if Boba Fett was just a dude with cool armor? Like, what sprang from... Basically, this is all history of the armor. So, like, what is it? Why did that armor captivate us so much? Is it just because he caught Han Solo? Or do you think that armor would have captivated us regardless?
I think that you're right in the sense that he was the man with no face. And the gunslinger, like you said, you know, Star Wars has that kind of Western feel to it. And he was that kind of lone wolf guy that was almost... somebody that was very popular in any way in the 70s, that type of anti-hero.
Yeah.
And so I think people latched on to that. They kind of felt that from Empire. And what we get with the character, it's very little. But I think, you know, the character was pretty cool. He talks back to Darth Vader.
Yeah, which is, you know, not many people do that successfully.
No, they don't. And Vader has respect for him, too, because he says, you know, if he dies, you'll be compensated. So, you know, it's very interesting to watch that scene, and especially, I think, in light of the Clone Wars and everything we know, who this character was and where he came from and all that. You know, I feel like that adds a lot of layers because Vader knows who this person is.
Here's a question for you, though. When episode one came out, for the longest time, and there were hints dropped to this effect in the comics, all of those sorts of things, I was firmly of the belief, coming out of seeing episode one, that Kitster was going to wind up being Boba Fett. I'm dead serious. That Kitster was going to wind up being the one in the armor because Vader creates 3PO. 3PO later crosses his path. R2 is Padme's. And I mean, I would say that based on the structure of every other relationship that we see through the, you know, the first six films, was Lucas was going to use Kitster as Boba Fett. I have nothing to confirm this, but I think he pulled back from that. And I think that as a result, we get a better thing because Boba Fett, Jango Fett slash Boba Fett, winds up being a wedge that opens that galaxy back up again. Because if Kitster had been Boba Fett, then everything is way too tied together, way too close. Does that make sense?
No, I think you're exactly right. And I that was one of the things that kind of makes it interesting that when you think about how close Anakin was to all the clones, and then he's dealing with a clone of the original Jango Fett, but who has had no modifications, you know, he hasn't had growth hormones or anything else that they gave the clones. He really is just a clone of his father, but of course, because of his upbringing, he will be his own person. So I think that's something that actually makes it much more fascinating than just having him be, one, a random bounty hunter, but two, like you said, having him have some connection with Anakin like Kitster or, you know, something like that.
Well, and here's another thing, right? Because you're talking about, like, you know, clone of the father and the, you know, the clones came from. There's almost a sense, and I, while you were talking, is the first time this really sort of flashed back in my brain, is Boba Fett becomes this really interesting echo. Like, you could almost read into the text now that Vader turns to him. Vader likes using Boba Fett because he reminds him of his glory days, in a sense.
Ooh, that's a good thought. I like that a lot. I actually had never thought about that, but you're right. He probably has more respect for Boba Fett as a person and a bounty hunter because of where he comes from.
Right.
I like that a lot. You know, now, I've got a question, too, because, you know, we talked a little bit about there for a second, but what did you think about what we got in the Clone Wars? Because I know a lot of fans decried that. I mean, you had people who just absolutely adored the Mandalorians, and when this came out, they were a lot, I mean, if there had been a place to have literal pitchforks and, you know, blazing torches to go burn down Lucasfilm, I think that might have happened with some fans. So what was your thought process, especially as we continue to learn more through, I mean, they continue with Mandalorians all the way through season 5. And then, of course, get even more now with Sabine in Rebels.
For me, I am the type of person where when you throw something at me that's unexpected or that rewrites some piece of like expanded, I mean, like, okay, just to give some background, I had Boba Fett was always, everybody loved Boba Fett. And I'm not saying that I didn't. Everybody, there's not a single person that didn't watch Empire Strikes Back, see that armor, hear that voice and go, yeah, man, that guy's got, he caught Han Solo. That is one bad mofo, right? Boba Fett had gotten so stale for me because of the fan love. I reacted very positively to what happened in Attack of the Clones and especially the Clone Wars with this rewriting of the Mandalorian mythos. I loved that they did it because they did something that I didn't expect. They did something where they said, you know, the B team took care of that. Here's our take on things. I accepted it from the get-go. And even if I had had any trouble with it, the Darksaber would have sold me on them immediately.
Yeah, that thing was just incredible. And what I loved about it was, again, that it added a depth to, because a lot of things happen in sci-fi where everyone is a cookie cutter of each other.
Yeah.
You know, everyone is, the entire race is exactly the same.
Right.
So the fact that we came in the Clone Wars and we said, you know, they used to be this warrior race. The warrior race had some serious issues, had some wars within itself, chaos, civil wars, all of that. And because of that, have turned to pacifism. It to me, it just made so much sense. And it created, again, a nice dichotomy in that one race where, you know, you still have ones who want to be the warrior race. You have the others who are firmly holding on to pacifism in that battle between the two. And it made for a really interesting conversation and honestly just great episodes of the Clone Wars when you threw the Jedi in there.
Absolutely. But
Obi-Wan.
But also, you know, you actually made me think. And God forgive me for, you know, one of the things I'm about to say. But the first thing I'll say is that it's almost like a more interesting Alderaan, because Alderaan was always, oh, we're peaceful. We're not. Really? There isn't somebody on there that wants to, like, come on, man. I mean, like, you know, people.
Are you sure there's not one serial killer right. on Alderaan? Yeah.
And like, if you're all pacifists and you have absolutely zero weapons whatsoever, then that serial killer you're talking about, Matt, oh, he's having a field day.
Well, and that was what was so interesting was, as I was rewatching, I actually did some research for the show. I rewatched all the Clone Wars episodes with the Mandalorians. Of course, I've just watched the brand new Rebels episode where the Mandalorians are featured again with Fenn Rau and Sabine Wren. I was really struck by the way in which the Mandalorian peacekeepers in the Clone Wars episodes were very reminiscent to me of what the Jedi were supposed to be.
Mm.
They're there to keep the peace. They're not there to fight a war.
Right.
And so the moment somebody comes with an overwhelming force, they're not able to handle it.
Yeah.
So I thought it was, when you start to look at it, especially in the Clone Wars, it is a nice small microcosm of what is going on in the rest of the galaxy happening on Mandalore, because then you get those characters who they want Mandalore to return to a more warrior sense so they can defend themselves and be great. And that's the struggle almost that's kind of happening in the Jedi Council too, in the Jedi Order, as they become more warrior-like instead of peacekeeper-like. And so I really, when you start to think about what they're doing in the Clone Wars, why they're doing it with the Mandalorians, kind of giving you a smaller picture of the larger picture, it really is brilliant. I mean, George is a genius.
Yeah, there's definitely the play within a play, and this is the thing that I preemptively asked for forgiveness for, but I got to go ahead and drop it. Would you say that Pre Vizsla's motto would be, make Mandalore great again?
Oh, gosh.
I couldn't help
it. It's going to be great. It's going to be big. It's going to be huge. It's going to be the best Mandalore you've ever seen.
Yeah.
We're going to use all the best words. We're going to have the best armor.
They do have the best armor. I will say that. Now, and that's the thing, you know, with the armor is the, you know, Boba Fett's armor stems from the idea of the super stormtrooper. It was originally all white. The video is out there where they show, like, you know, working flamethrower and all. I don't know how somebody didn't kill themselves with that thing. But beautifully designed armor. And basically, like, you know, Lucas being Lucas was like, that armor's great. Let's go ahead and use it for somebody else and repaint it. And then, you know, essentially the armor come. Anyway, with that armor, let's go ahead and have the discussion. We have a galaxy, a fictional galaxy, where we have Darth Vader's armor. We have the Red Guard armor. We have General Grievous, who is basically a walking suit of armor. We have all of these great design elements. What is it you think that makes the Mandalorian armor so darn cool? Because here it is 40 years later, we're all still obsessed with the Mandalorian armor. What is it about it that just hits that chord?
I think what you said is really spot on. It's just so cool. I mean, the helmet look, the design of the armor for the body, the way it all works together. Now, I would say that, honestly, Boba Fett's is probably the cheesiest compared to what we get like later.
Really?
On you see in the yeah, because I feel like the armor that we see in the Clone Wars looks a little more complete.
Interesting.
Boba Fett's looks, I mean, when you really look at it, to me, it's not as cool or as great as what we got in, like, say, in the Clone Wars.
Really?
I mean, I think of Pre Vizsla's armor being really sweet. I love Bo-Katan's armor. But even in the newest Rebels episode that just came out, John, the Imperial Commandos.
Yeah.
Finally kind of seeing brought to life almost Joe Johnson's idea.
Yeah.
Where it's more the stark white and everything with that, wow, ultra slim jetpack.
It's definitely a better
design.
They
got that jetpack. Yeah, I think that jetpack design comes straight from Apple because that's what it looks like.
Yeah. I like that. An Apple store for Mandalorians as they walk through. No, I disagree that Boba Fett's is the cheesiest. I actually give that distinction to Jango Fett's armor because in Attack of the Clones, when he moves around, his chest plate armor bends a bit, and so it becomes less convincing as armor. Like, you know, there's no reason why the space age armor wouldn't be able to bend. And, you know, we have armor weave cloaks and those sorts of things in Star Wars. But in specific, the scene where he's, you know, and it's a scene that I love when he's fighting Obi-Wan. There are a couple of moments where his arm crosses across his body and the plating bends and it looks too soft. It looks cushiony almost. And I'm kind of like, really? That kind of, you know, as much as I like Jango Fett's color scheme, I'm not a fan of the armor itself specifically because it looked the fakest to me.
Okay.
You know, even though I love this, like that is the color scheme that I think is cooler, but you know,
it is pretty stinking cool. I really like that armor. I think it looks really nice. And I'll put it this way. You know, Boba Fett has the distinction of also being the very first one created, you know, in the 80s and he's meant to be as a side background character. So I don't think they spent as much time on the suit and the armor and his shoes just look like high tops that have been, you know, like upgraded instead of like cool boots or something.
I mean,
he's got
knives down there on it by his ankles.
It's pretty true.
Cool.
He does, but you know. So in the end, the thing that I love about the Mandalorians to me, from Clone Wars all the way up to you know when we see Boba Fett and if he's a Mandalorian or not, but just the progression and just the storyline that got created to make them, I think, a much more rounded race and much more interesting group of characters. And, you know, I honestly really also loved, you know, the character of Satine.
Oh, yeah. Satine was wonderful.
Which can we please, Marvel and Disney or Disney and Del Rey books, please give us like a comic or a book about that time period where Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon are on the run with Satine.
Oh, yeah.
Back when Obi-Wan is, you know, a young Padawan and him and her are kind of falling in love, like, wouldn't that be a fantastic comic or story?
I think it would be a fantastic comic or story. I think it can't possibly live up to what I have in my head, though. Like, that, some of those stories, I like the fact that they're left nebulous. That's just how I'm wired. Like, I like, you know, and I've cited before, you know, that the prequels, I like the fact that they don't necessarily just follow that, you know, what fans had in their mind sort of thing. I would like I'm torn. I'd love to read that story, but at the same time, I don't want to read that story because the whole time I'm going to be sitting there saying, that's not what I would have done. That's not what I would have done, which wouldn't be fair to it. All that said,
right,
I'd still buy it and read it. So yeah, you know, there you go. Now, I do want to say, in case anybody has not watched the Mandalorian episodes, they are very much worth watching. They are some of the finest half hours / story arcs that the Clone Wars ever had. They're highlights to the Rebels seasons as well. Satine, who Matt just mentioned, is the Duchess of Mandalore, who Obi-Wan had a past with. And I will, you know, obviously Satine sounds like Satin. One of the things that I've always loved about Death Watch, who is, they're the people that wear the cool armor, is that Prey Vizsla, Vizsla is a type of dog, can be aggressive dog. And I've always, one of the things that I've liked about the whole Mandalorian thing is they've paid attention to the names. Sabine Wren, Wren is a type of bird, takes flight, that sort of thing. Vizsla is an attack dog, and he's the leader of the separatist faction. Satine is a very soft character, you know, for Obi-Wan, you know, like a warm embrace sort of thing. Like they, I think that the Mandalorians, I think that one of the reasons the arcs that have really struck with me, in short, is that I think that they have paid more attention to the naming conventions with those characters that make them resonate, where their names mean something.
No, I completely agree with you. I think that's one of the things about Star Wars that, you know, sometimes it was George just having a goofy idea.
Yeah.
You know, like corn fritos.
Corn frita.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but at the same time, there were other characters, like you said, where they really are paying attention to what this name is going to mean if you start to think about it. And they know fans like to think about things. And I think that that's really fantastic because it means they care, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I think that's the cool thing, is that they definitely care about these characters and the story, and it's what makes it so interesting. So I really love the way in which they, from the Clone Wars specifically, where we learn all of this about the Mandalorians, all the way into Rebels, where we're starting to get, you know, Mandalorians back. I really like the way they're setting up and kind of in some ways continuing some of those storylines that we didn't get resolved because,
right.
I mean, we know that Darth Maul ruled Mandalore. The last time we saw him on the show, Palpatine had put the smack down on him.
Yes.
Then you have the Dark Horse comics where the Mandalorians were helping him again. And we know from the Ahsoka book that somehow Maul was still on Mandalore by Order 66.
Right.
And so there's so much interesting history and backstory there. And then it seems like that just completely and utterly left Mandalore decimated.
Yeah.
After all of those wars and civil wars, and now you've got it under Imperial rule because this puppet character who was actually in the Dark Horse comics is back and being used by the Empire to rule. And to me, it's fascinating stuff.
It really is. And in terms of them being decimated, I've always liked the way that, you know, they threw in an environmental message with Concord. With Concordia mm-hmm. / Concord Dawn, where mining had wiped out the planet and the forests were just growing back. And it's just a throwaway mm-hmm. line, but it's very conscious of the fact that, you know, there is a price to pay for over-industrialization, which seems to very much stay in tune with the Star Wars, you know, mindset of things of, you know, too much reliance on technology and losing touch with nature
right.
and those sorts of things. But do you know how they could have stayed better in touch with the galaxy and with nature, Matt?
I don't know, John. How could they?
With a subscription to Loot Crate, which would have
That's
helped.
So true.
It would have helped Mandalore, and it would help Aggressive Negotiations and the Nerd Party Network. Go on over to lootcrate.com/nerdparty. Enter the code NERDPARTY. Get a discount on a new subscription, and you will be treated every single month to something shipped to wherever you live in the galaxy, full of fan goodies and special exclusives that you're not going to get anywhere else. So again, go over to lootcrate.com/nerdparty, enter the code NERDPARTY, and while you're there, go on over and interact with Matt on all the different places where he can be found. Matt, why don't you let them know what coordinates you're at out there on the galaxy?
Oh, gosh, John, you can find me all over the place. I'll be on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can also find me on the Trek FM network doing The Orb with Chris Jones talking about Deep Space Nine. I'm on Literary Treks with Bruce and Dan talking about the books and comics of Star Trek. We get a chance to interview the authors, which is a lot of fun. You can also find me there on the 602 Club, which is the general geek show. We have a blast talking about something new within geekdom each and every week, or something old, and you never know what you're going to get. And you can find myself and yourself, John, on Star Wars, the 602 Club Collection, which is just all the Star Wars episodes we've done. And I got to say, we've had a blast on that show, so check that out. Both of those feeds are on iTunes, 602 Club and Star Wars 602 Club Collection. Now, John, you're everywhere these days. Where can people find you?
Well, when I am not hanging out trying to foment Discord on Mandalore, you can find me on the internet. Kessel Junkie is my name. You'll find me out there somewhere. You can also find me co-hosting Words with Nerds with my pal Craig. I co-host Stage 9 over on the Trek FM network with Mike Schindler. And I co-host a show called, that's a brand new show, called Great Shot Kid, which is exploring the works of Star Wars creators. And that is right here on the Nerd Party Network, also with Mike Schindler. So I think that it's very easy for you guys to find out where to come and interact with us. Matt, I think we have an email address as well.
Yeah, you can head over to thenerdparty.com/contact. Just choose a show. Choose Aggressive Negotiations, then it'll come to John and I, and that way we'll be able to interact with you about your question or your thoughts. And of course, you know, we're on iTunes, and iTunes is really the place where it's the easiest place for people to get and download podcasts. Honestly, it's the biggest place for people to do that. So while you're over there, hit us up with a star rating and review. That really does help us out. We really appreciate everybody who has gone over there and done that. And John, we need to give some love to some people who have gone and done that recently.
Yes, we do.
We've had two great new 5-star reviews, and those people need to get called out. We've got one by Sean Dorman. Thank you so much, Sean. Gave us a review. The review title was Beautiful Men and a Beautiful Podcast. 5 stars. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And then Brandon H83 said, deep and highly specific Star Wars podcast. Thank you so much, guys, for your 5-star reviews. It does wonders for helping people find the show. So follow their lead. Go over there. Give us a review, too.
Absolutely.
And find out how you can help the show with that. So thank you so much.
Well, you know what, Matt? I think there's only one thing left to say. I think it's time to close negotiations.
John, negotiations are closed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.